Geekscape.com.
Hello and welcome to Aryan Narrations. You're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, and today's narration is from Front Camphor by Ed Volsink. The following was a letter sent to Ed Volsink in May 1957 by Paula Hitler, the Führer's sister, as a sign of her continued support for the National Socialist cause. To the rulers of occupied democratic Germany, you gentlemen, do not forget this important fact. Your name will, with your corpse, be perished, rotten, and forgotten, whereas the name of Adolf Hitler still will be commemorated and hallowed. You cannot kill his name with your deformation, nor strangle it with your ink-stained, dirty fingers. You cannot wipe his name out of the souls of millions and millions, for that you are yourselves much too small and insignificant. Where he has loved, it was for Germany and the Aryan race. Where he has fought, it was for Germany and the Aryan race. Where he has failed, it happened for Aryan honour and German esteem. And when in this world his life remained his only property, he gave it up for Germany. What did you give up until now? And who of you was willing to sacrifice his life for the Aryan people? You sought only your own power and wealth and delight, grub and booze, a delicious life without responsibility when you were governing your people. Be assured, gentlemen, only already the pure and unselfish thinking and acting of the Führer guarantees his immortality. That his fanatical battle for Aryan greatness did not result in a National Socialist victory, as, for example, Cromwell's in Great Britain, is maybe partly caused by the British mentality, because the Englishman, with all his inclination towards lack of compassion, envy, and merciless, never forgets to be an Englishman in the first place, with loyalty to his queen, while the German put his need for recognition first, not in the first place being a German. It does not interest you, gentlemen rulers, that with you the whole nation will be destroyed. Your principle will never be general interest comes before self-interest, but always the contrary. And with this rotten principle, you want to prevent the immortality of Germany's greatest son, my brother, Adolf Hitler. What I wrote down in the first years after the war is still valid in 1957 and confirms the exactness of my conviction. Berchtesgaden, May the 1st, 1957. Signed, Paula Hitler. And translated into English from the original German by Ed Volsink. This is the story of one man's political awakening at a young age, his view of life at a young age, his desire to be a soldier in the service of his ideology rather than the country of his birth. This is the story of how a young Dutchman changed the direction of his life at the age of 16 and became a crusader for a political belief. Across the years, and after many hardships, when interviewed in 1992 and 1994, over 50 years later, Ed Volsink remained as committed to his ideology as he was in 1940. Gerrit, Ed Volsink, was in 1940 no ordinary Dutch teenager. He was already an active National Socialist, with several years' experience as a member of the Hitler Youth. In late 1940, using forged papers supplied by the RSHA, the SS Security Service, he joined the training detachment of the Wehrmacht's Commando Formation, the Division Brandenburg, ZBV 800. On his 18th birthday, Et was informed that he was to be secretly enrolled in the Allgemeine SS, and that he would always hold equal rank in the SS with his rank in the Wehrmacht. Volsink saw active service on all fronts with the Brandenburg, gaining promotions, decorations, and war wounds. His skill in the field, his devotion to the cause, and his political connections in senior SS circles saw him through the turmoil of July 1944, and at 20 years of age, with the rank of captain in the SS commando unit Oranienburg. It was during his year of service in the Waffen SS that he met and served under the legendary SS Standartenführer Otto Scorsini. Ending the war amidst the ruins of Europe, Et Volsink sought to continue his service to the Reich as a member of Werwolf, the National Socialist Resistance Movement. However, Volsink was betrayed and captured, and as a Dutch SS man, destined for a grim future. Despite his rough treatment in post-war concentration camps, Et Volsink survived. Not only survived, but was released by the post-war Allied forces and continued his trade for NATO. The post-war service of Et Volsink was every part as dangerous and secretive as his wartime experiences. There is much that cannot be written at present, but at some future date, the story will be completed. In spite of all that he endured, Et Volsink remained a die-hard National Socialist. In his own words, "I know no other way of life, and this is the right way." Since his release from prison in 1948, he worked on as a werewolf, committing himself at every opportunity to the preservation and resurrection of National Socialism. Which is why, over half a century after he first donned a National Socialist uniform, he was still spied upon by hostile agencies, his home raided by armed police, so-called journalists accused him of leading the European neo-Nazi revival, and TV documentaries treated him as some dangerous revolutionary. Interviewed again in 1994, he was racked by ill health, the result of his war wounds and ill treatment in the years of post-war captivity. Yet still, he remained a defiant figure for his cause, proud of his service to the Third Reich. Et Volsink died in December 1995. Part 1. Holland in the pre-war years. Although the Netherlands had remained neutral during the First World War, the country could not escape the effects of those events which shook the old monarchies and regimes of Europe to their foundations. Despite the neutrality of the Netherlands, the Dutch royal family, the House of Orange, were closely connected to the other dynasties of Europe and viewed the political turmoil across the continent after 1918 with apprehension. In the years of Et Volsink's childhood, social and economic conditions in the Netherlands were as bad as elsewhere in Europe. The 1920s and early 30s saw the economy stagnate and serious poverty and unemployment grip the nation's limited industrial centres. The Dutch government was incapable of resolving the situation, torn as it was between maintaining the overseas colonies and competing with its industrial rivals in Western Europe. In many parts of the Netherlands, alcoholism was a serious problem among the unemployed. Impoverished and bitter men sought solace in gin. The wise and chill drinkers saw their meagre social aid money disappearing on alcohol, while only boiled potatoes were left as a cheap food for the poor. The influence of a powerful Roman Catholic Church forced the government to change the distribution of social aid from money to food in order to combat the misery of alcoholism. Although the move was well-intentioned, it only meant that the drinkers would hawk their tins of boiled beef from door to door, selling them for 10% of their value just to buy gin. Ed Volsink remembered his mother willingly obliging this trade, buying tinned meat cheaply from the desperate. "I have never eaten so much fine goulash as in this period. My father disagreed sharply with what he called my mother's exploitation of the rotten democracy's victims, but he really had no spare time to interfere in the housekeeping." As a country bordering on Germany, the Netherlands could not avoid being drawn into the ideological influences of German politics during the 1930s, particularly after Hitler's coming to power in 1933. As with other European countries, there were various fascist and national socialist organizations operating in the Netherlands. Some were serious attempts at active political campaigning. Others were mere imitators of either Italian fascism or German National Socialism. The key parties in Dutch politics of this kind were the Algemeen Nederlandse Fascistenbond, the ANFB, the Zwarte Front, later called National Front, National Socialistisch Nederlandse Arbeiderspaarfitsch, the NSNAP, National Socialist Beweging, the NSB, the Verbond van Solidaristan, and the Verbond van Nationalisten. The NSB had more than 100,000 members, and the other movements were small by comparison. There was also an underground influence of the German NSDAP, which was the arm of the movement dealing with German and German-speaking communities outside the German frontier. The last three organizations were central to the political education of Ed Volsink and the shaping of his future life as he came into contact with organized political ideology at the age of 10. Ed joined the Hitler Youth at the age of 10 through the influence of his father. His father was pro-German and a member of both the Dutch National Socialist Organization, the NSNAP, and the German NSDAP. Although Ed and his father did not have a close relationship, his father introduced Ed to National Socialism and to holiday trips to Germany. Ed claimed that his father enlightened him to the reality of Germany's economic revival under National Socialism after 1933, and the visible improvement in the living conditions of Germany's working population. This, he claimed, was through the evidence of his own eyes through the family holiday visits to Germany. As Ed explained, "I had seen the malaise and decline for the working people in Germany and my own country. Then, after the Führer took power, after a year or so, everything recovered. It was remarkable." This situation was not an easy one for Ed or his father, as being an active National Socialist in the Netherlands, especially a pro-German one, was fraught with danger. Ed did not realize the full extent of his father's political commitment until some years later, and had to contend with a very anti-German maternal grandfather. As a member of the Hitler Youth outside Germany, it was not easy for Ed to participate in Hitler Youth activities on a regular basis other than by attending Wehrsportlager camps once or twice a year. So to supplement his political youth activities, Ed was encouraged by his father to join the local section of the Jugendsturm, the youth movement of the NSB. The skills and experience gained in the HJ Wehrsportlager were recognized and valued by the Jugendsturm, and Ed was later to lead and train Dutch youngsters as part of his Jugendsturm duties. Later, in 1940, after surviving the chaos created by the German invasion of the Netherlands, Ed was to see how his father was now an important political figure locally. It was, however, through other contacts, not his father, that Ed Volsink was able to gain entry into the Wehrmacht at the age of only 16. From initial training, he was sent for battle service on the Russian front during the dreadful winter of 41 and 42. On his return, he was sent for further training before assignment to a Kampfgruppe of the Brandenburg Division, in which he would serve on all fronts until the autumn of 1944. Etvolsink's war was a dangerous and varied service. During his years in frontline combat, he was wounded 3 times, decorated 7 times, and met a number of key figures in the history of the Third Reich and National Socialist Europe. In his native Netherlands, he was active in the youth section of the NSB, and as such met leading Dutch National Socialists, including the NSB leader Anton Mussert. In Germany and elsewhere, he met leading SS officers such as SS Gruppenführer Reinhard Heydrich, chief of the SS security services, SS General Ernst Kaltenbrunner, head of the RSHA, SS Gruppenführer Walter Schellenberg, head of the SD intelligence section. The senior leaders of the Third Reich, Reichsführer Heinrich Himmler, Et met once while Himmler was reviewing SS units in Finland, and the Führer Adolf Hitler he saw only once in person, and at a great distance, when the Führer was awarding decorations to a large number of troops. Etvolsink recalled that he was some distance away from the Führer's presence, lost in the ranks of those drawn up for the special ceremony. Etvolsink himself was there to be awarded the close combat bar in gold. He recalled that the occasion did not make a great impression on him, as he did not personally meet the Führer. In addition, Et did not enjoy large gatherings or having to wear the full dress uniform. Etvolsink's wartime actions saw him serving on every European front, and also a brief spell in North Africa. His specialist skills in languages and commando warfare also saw his inclusion in special operations in some neutral countries and on top-secret infiltration actions, some of which still remain secret. Since Etvolsink was not only a regular soldier, but also a political activist, he held rank in the Allgemeine SS, rising to the level of Hauptsturmführer, captain, by the war's end. This membership of the Allgemeine SS helped to ensure that Volsink was sent to serve in the Waffen-SS formation Oranienburg after the dispersal of the Brandenburg Kampfgruppen in late 1944. Etvolsink had a distinguished war record, wounded in action 3 times, decorated 7 times, promoted to officer rank at a very young age, holding equal rank in both the SS and the Wehrmacht at the age of 20. As the Third Reich disintegrated in May 1945, Et was given his secret werewolf orders to continue the struggle. Dispatched to the Netherlands with false papers and uniform, he was deliberately placed amongst the surrendering elements of the Dutch Waffen SS division, Landsturm Nederland. Etvolsink survived the traumas of the prison camps and the brutal interrogations, being sentenced to death as a suspected war criminal and held on the death row of the prison. Finally being saved from death by recruitment into the Dutch military intelligence network, where he served NATO against the Soviet bloc. Yet across the years of serving the democracy he hated, he was able to maintain and serve the National Socialist cause. Etvolsink was active from the 1950s up to the time of his death in the 1990s, working for National Socialism in the Netherlands, in Germany, across Europe, and later the world. From the early days with the Jan Hartman organizations in the immediate post-war years, to his Europe-wide liaison work in the 1980s, Etvolsink maintained his loyalty to the cause. He was party to many secrets in his life, both during and after the Second World War. Some of the operational and political details of his service have been withheld until such time as it is safe to put them into print. It is hoped that this book will shed some light on the extraordinary life of an extraordinary man. It is for the reader to judge, but whatever political viewpoint the reader may hold, here surely was a man who truly believed in his motto, the motto of the Waffen SS, "My honour is my loyalty." Ed Volsink was born in December 1924, into a world which was far different to that of today. The Netherlands was a fairly advanced Western European state, but had remained neutral during the First World War, still retaining its monarchy, the House of Orange, and still possessing a string of overseas colonies. The average Dutchman of the period was locked into a fairly simple way of life. Most people did not travel further than 20 miles outside their hometowns or villages, because very few had cars. Trains were slow, and with an indifferent service, most people in the cities used trams. In the towns and villages, they walked or used bicycles. The ordinary Dutch people were not well informed. Most news came late, and only via the newspapers. Radio was only just becoming widely available in the Netherlands, and the still experimental cinema newsreels were few and far between. Ed lived in a small town, in the south of the Netherlands, where his father held a good job as the sales director in a sewing cotton factory. His father regarded himself as a success, since he came from a large, poor family in the east of Holland and had studied hard to work his way up in the textile industry. Herr Volsink had committed hours of study in bookkeeping, economics, and most importantly, in languages to gain the precious certificates which had secured his job. Not only this, but when he was promoted in the company and moved from the east of Holland to the south, he was considered something of a high flyer. As an up-and-coming young businessman, he had met and married Ed's mother and settled down to build up a career and a family. The town in which Ed was brought up was completely dominated by the Roman Catholic Church. In the town council, only one councillor represented the non-Catholic minority. He was Ed's grandfather, his mother's father. Ed's grandfather regarded all non-Catholic ideology as anti-Christian. From the strict Lutheran Protestants to the soft liberals and Democrats, who were largely members of the upper classes. His grandfather was an overseer in a factory that constructed bridges, a man seldom to be found working at a desk, but always in the midst of the workers. The factory built bridges up from raw iron, producing the steel, forging the girders and riveting the sections, a large, harsh works in the 19th century style. The old man worked 6 days a week, from 7 a.m. to 6 p.m, making his supervision rounds, even on Sundays. As a small boy, Ed would often accompany his grandfather on his Sunday inspection rounds, looking at the harsh working conditions of the factory and listening to his grandfather's political opinions. Ed's grandparents lived an austere life in a large house which had no electricity. It was the custom that the four daughters with their husbands and children gathered at this house every Sunday, and Ed Volsink's early memories were of those Sunday gatherings. Upon reaching retirement age, Ed's grandfather moved to Breda, where he bought several houses as an investment, and shortly afterwards revealed himself to be a political Marxist and fervent admirer of the German communist revolutionaries Rosa Luxemburg and Liebknecht. The old man tried hard to fill young Volsink's head with his Marxist dogma. Unfortunately for Ed, his own father worked long hours and was unable to exercise any kind of political influence over his son until much later. It was during the annual family holidays that Herr Volsink sought to undo the indoctrination that his young son was receiving at the hands of the old man in Breda. Although the workers at the cotton thread factory only had a 1 week holiday each year for the town fair, Ed's father was fortunate to have a manager's 3 week summer break. It was during this period of the year when Ed would accompany his parents on the long train journey into Germany. Ed always noted that once in Germany, his father became a completely changed man, far removed from the overworked and distant figure at home. As he grew older, he came to understand why. His father was a politically active National Socialist. Politically, the Netherlands was just as confused as the rest of Europe. The whole political spectrum was represented on its streets. On the nationalist right, there were several organizations, the NSB being the largest. Although the NSB was a National Socialist movement, it was very much cast in the Dutch mould. It sought to maintain the Dutch colonies and had a strong Christian ethic, one of its main slogans being confidence in God. The leader of the NSB, Anton Mussert, was a brave and capable leader, but was also committed to preserving the Netherlands as an independent maritime nation, looking outwards to the Dutch Empire. In addition to his commitments to preserving the Dutch traditions, Mussert was also a devout Christian. Here, the Volsinks differed with the mainstream Dutch National Socialists. Herr Volsink was a member of the smaller NSNAP, which carried an almost identical program to the German National Socialist Party, and worked towards greater cooperation with Germany, looking towards union between the two countries as part of a National Socialist Europe centered on a greater Germany. Herr Volsink was also a secret member of the NSDAP, maintaining his contacts with the German National Socialist Party on regular business trips and family holidays to Germany. It was through his influence that his son Ed was to join the Hitler Youth outside Germany. Ed attended training camps in Germany and Austria after 1938. These Wehrsportlager would have a profound influence on the direction of young Volsink's life. Unfortunately, for the younger Volsink, his membership of the German Hitler Youth was illegal in the Netherlands and had to be kept secret. Since the NSNAP did not have a youth section in his region, it was forced by circumstance to join the youth section of the NSB, which was called the Jugendsturm. Although it was an NS organization, the pro-Hitler and anti-Christian opinions of the younger Volsink caused some friction. However, the skills Ed had required as a regular student at the Wehrsportlager in Germany were badly needed by the Jugendsturm, who lacked trained instructors in his age group, particularly in the southern area of the Netherlands. Ed was very actively involved in the Jugendsturm, even though he disagreed with some of the NSB political philosophy, and attended meetings every Wednesday and Saturday afternoon. He was frequently promoted up through the ranks of the Jugendsturm because of the skills he acquired through the HJ training camps. However, as the inevitability of European war drew closer in 1939, the political atmosphere in the Netherlands became increasingly polarized, and Ed Volsink was totally isolated at school as the wealthier elements in Dutch society increasingly turned against the extreme right. As will be shown in another chapter, Ed's training at the Wehrsportlager helped to save him when war came to the Netherlands in 1940, and his dual Jugendsturm Hitler Jugend membership assisted his entry into the German army. He remained an active member of the Jugendsturm until he joined the Brandenburg Division. In fact, he was still technically a Jugendsturmer during his first year in the Wehrmacht, since he was under 18 years of age. Moreover, Ed was called upon to take part in a special Jugendsturm honor guard for Anton Mussert, the NSB leader, while on leave from the Brandenburg. Ed protested that he was on leave and had not been active in the Jugendsturm since joining the Wehrmacht, but his family insisted. Ed knew that it was strictly forbidden to discuss his service in the Brandenburg, but would be allowed to wear some of his combat decorations on his Jugendsturm uniform. Ed stood out at the front of the special honor guard in the ceremony at Utrecht in the Jugendsturm uniform he had not worn for over a year. Ed and the Jugendsturm stood alongside the old fighters of the WA as Mussert made his speech to the NSB veterans, those with over 10 years' service to the movement. And we will continue tomorrow with Ed Volsink in the Hitler Youth.
You're listening to Radio Aryan at Radio Aryan.